You are listening to the Pitch Invasion Podcast, the podcast for football travelists.
Welcome back to Pitch Invasion. We move our focus now to European football, more specifically the English game, where once again Manchester City, for the fourth time in the Premier League era, were crowned champions. And I saw that list. They're still so far behind the actual name that matters. It's quite farcical.
But well, anyway, what name is that?
Let's not even get into that.
Manchester City is blue.
They are the champions once again. And on the line we've got John Goliath, who's a keen Spurs fan. So I'm sure finishing, what was it?
Boo.
Wasn't too terrible when it comes to Spurs, but again, it didn't really matter who finishes second down to sixth, because the top two sides were so far ahead of everyone else. It wasn't really, it didn't make for a great Premier League season, I feel, John. I don't know where you stand as far as that is concerned.
Well, I don't really care at this point that the season, this top four was so important for us. for Spurs, because obviously, we didn't spend a cent in the last two transfer windows. Mm. So many injuries to key players. We were up there by, you know, sort of Christmas, and then Boxing Day, yeah, we lost to Wolves, and from there, sort of, we fell apart. But there was a chance that we wouldn't make top four. But unfortunately, you know, Manchester United, Arsenal, and I think even Chelsea to some extent, although they ended up third, nobody actually wanted a top four place, it seemed. And there were some bizarre results at the end of the campaign, which gave the top two, you know, the chance. They fought their own battle and eventually finished more than 20 points above the edge, which is probably unheard of these days. In a league like the Premiership. So I'm happy for my team, top four in the Champions League final. I think if you would have said to Mauricio Pochettino at the start of the season, you can have this, you'll probably take it with both arms.
Absolutely, and I definitely agree with that, especially with the injury that you've just touched on. I mean, Harry Kane has been missing for quite some time, in different stages of the season. Heung-min Son was away for a large part of the season with the Asia Cup. At the back, you've had Sergio Aurier, who has been missing in action through injury. Toby Alderweireld has missed out for some time. Jan Vertonghen as well. The list is just endless. And again, the fact that you guys didn't spend anything, which is still just, you know, remarkable to me, it just says a lot about the teams that finished below you guys and just how terrible everyone else was. So again, congratulations to Spurs for making it into the top four. And the season could yet get better, and you guys are crowned champions.
Can you imagine that? I think John has just John, welcome to the show. First of all, I'm gonna come into you two-footed with with studs up, right? I think John is just going over the top here. Listen, I remember an Arsenal team that also had hardly spent, you know, into the Emirates. We're in a Champions League semi-final with Almunia, Senderos, Giroud, unpolished Alex Song. Do you understand what I'm saying? So this Tottenham thing, we've seen this before. I'm not surprised by...
They had Thierry Henry.
No, at that time, Henry had gone. We went to a Champions League semi-final against Man United with the likes of Flamini, Almunia, Giroud, Senderos,
Danielson. Champions League semi-final?
Oh, there's the question.
We had a red-hot Manchester United.
It doesn't matter because he didn't make it past. They've made it past now.
Didn't make it past. Doesn't make sense.
They had a better quality side than, you know, we did. Senderos. Give me a break, John. Senderos.
Shame. Look, for Arsenal fans.
I just want to, you know what, you probably won't hear this much. I will give credit to Tottenham in this
They're
regard.
They're my team of the season, by the way.
I'm not sure about that. I think I've got Wolves as team of the season. I will give Tottenham praise here in this regard that, you know, I think every time a team has a once-in-a-generation team, look, this is not even about Arsenal-Tottenham banter now, but I think Tottenham, you know, is not in that established big club order of English football, right? They're probably on their way there. So when you look at what they've done in the last couple of years, they have signed players that, pound for pound, that entire starting 11 could be starting in other big clubs if you just spread them out across.
Yeah.
And to have that sort of squad, you know, for a club like Tottenham on the payroll that they are, I think is incredible. Because, I mean, we're sitting there with Arsenal. We can't offload Mesut Ozil and his £350,000 a week. We had to fight to get Ramsey to stay because we couldn't pay him enough. And I'm looking at people like Dele Alli, Christian Eriksen, Harry Kane, Alderweireld, Hugo Lloris, that are sitting there on wages that at Arsenal is probably what, you know, something that Iwobi or somebody is probably getting, and they're still, you know, performing and no complaints. And I think that's all down to Pochettino and just how he's managed to motivate the players.
And I think when Pochettino came from Southampton, I think the key thing for him was he took those scouts they had at Southampton, because if you remember the last couple of years, Southampton has had some really decent sides.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, some guys that has gone to, I think, you know, was it Henderson was there, if I'm not mistaken? Jordan Henderson,
yes.
The likes of Lallana.
Yeah.
Henderson is Rodgers' player.
Fantastic.
No, but he's saying that we...
He came from Southampton.
Scouting system.
Yeah.
So they had a fantastic scouting system. And I think he took those guys to Spurs.
Mm.
And, I mean, they picked up Dele Alli for like 5 mil.
He came from MK Dons.
But I'm talking about these scouts now.
Yeah.
They basically got him for 5 mil.
Mm.
They got Vertonghen. They basically, before, Ajax were always fashionable for selling players, Ajax Amsterdam.
Mm.
But over the last few years, our whole backline was basically made out of Ajax players.
Yeah.
Because Pochettino you know, those guys, they wanted ball players who could play from the back.
Mm.
And obviously, when you get an Ajax defender, he's always going to be able to play from the back.
Yeah.
Because of his ball skills. And I mean, they bought a couple of other players. They picked up Lucas Moura, which is out for 20 mil from PSG.
And Heung-min Son as well, we haven't even touched on. But I think that's for me the biggest thing, and perhaps maybe with Liverpool as well, the same thing. Sorry, go on, John.
Yeah. Now I'm saying the scouting has been brilliant, especially now, in a time where you really can't compete with the big boys when you want to, because Spurs won't be able to buy a Neymar. Or spend money on the Coutinho.
Yeah.
So they have to get players who are right up there. But then, you know, you've got a coach in Pochettino who can bring out the best in them, and we've seen that over the last few years. And what he's sort of done with the likes of Dele Alli, Moussa Sissoko, prime example. Last year, he was seen as a donkey.
Mm.
He was seen as a donkey with the first touch of an ex-murderer. But you know, the guy has just been unbelievable, and you know, he's the heart and soul of our team at the moment.
Mm.
And yeah, it's been absolutely brilliant to watch.
No, I absolutely agree with you. I don't know where you got that analogy from, but I will definitely adopt it. But, I mean, we're talking about the likes of Moura and Heung-min Son, and I was trying to sort of, you know, equate it and compare it to Liverpool as well, where in the crunch time, in the most important moments of the season these last few weeks, where, you know, you didn't have the likes of Harry Kane to call upon, and Heung-min Son as well was missing through suspension, there's been this little sort of narrative of an unlikely hero to come through and you know, and save the day. You know, you look at Liverpool, Divock Origi, Jorginho Wijnaldum, who came off the bench and literally changed the game for Liverpool against Barcelona. With you guys, you had Lucas Moura, who, you know, there was a period during the season where he was hot, and then for a couple of months he went really cold and was starting off the bench, and then he comes in a game that is of extreme importance, and not only, you know, scores a hat-trick, but literally wins the game for you guys with the last kick of, you know, of the ball in the Champions League semi-final. So having that type of squad, having that type of mentality, the type of players who can do that for you, is something that perhaps if you look at United, you look at Arsenal, you look at Chelsea, who didn't have the season. Spurs, Liverpool, and City, they had it, and they had it in quite some abundance as well.
Yeah, if you think about it, you know, we've always been criticized, especially over the last few years, for making semi-finals. We made the semi-final of the League Cup this year, and then we lost on penalties to Chelsea. Then people always regarded us as spotless. And, you know, for 45 minutes in that Champions League semi-final, I thought it was gone, really. After 2-0 down, I actually wanted to go sleep, to go cry myself to sleep. But I just watched it as a courtesy. And you know, it was probably the best 35 minutes of my sort of footballing experience of supporting Spurs.
Yeah.
It was just fantastic. And that all comes down to, I think, you know, a bit of belief and a bit of a look here. For the first time, actually, we are on this big stage. We are here. We didn't get here by accident. Although it was probably one hell of a fight, because I mean, we had 3 points, we had 1 point from three games in the group. And if you remember, Lucas Moura scored a late goal against Barcelona in the last game of the group stages.
Which actually
then took us through. And from there, you know, the stars has been aligning. We've been beat Dortmund, you know, came through unlikely win against City. In that tie, and again another unlikely win now, and you know the stars are aligning for Spurs, and I think, you know, this could be, you know, one of the greatest probably stories in the mold of sort of a Leicester winning the Premier League.
At the start of the season,
who would have thought that Spurs would be in a Champions League final? The stars are aligning.
Are you gonna have my support in the Champions League final? I can tell you that much. As far as Liverpool are concerned, I have no bone in me. There's no piece of DNA in me that will ever support Liverpool in anything. And as such, Tottenham United.
Tottenham United.
Manchester Spurs. That's what it is. Speaking of Liverpool, let's touch a bit on what has been a remarkable season of their own. I mean, a historic season in many ways. 97. I'm not sure if anyone can ever get 97 points and still not win the league. Imeka, from where you're sitting as a Liverpool fan, how do you even start?
Explain this debacle, please.
Yeah, please.
It's not a debacle.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
I don't know what else you expect the boys to do. To win the league. Well, you know, they did their own job.
Which was win as many games as they can.
And they lost only one game in the season. They won everything. And, well, just wasn't to be, because Man City had a point better. And if I try to find where that 1 point came from, it's looking more and more like the game at Anfield that Liverpool didn't beat Man City, because Man City beat them away from home. So that's the 1 point difference. It's not even that the Man City beat them. It's the fact that Liverpool didn't beat them at home. And Pep, to his credit in that game, for once played very negative. Because
he's won the league because of that.
No, I agree. Yes, but I'm saying to what I was asked earlier about whether I thought Liverpool would beat Barcelona 4-0. If any team plays the way Barcelona and City play, and the attack against Liverpool, they'll be exposed and they'll be hit, because Liverpool thrives on those kind of scenarios. But you know, congratulations to Man City. They thoroughly have shown that they are going to take a lot to stop. The great thing is that Man City wants so badly to win the Champions League, and you know, maybe we have something to.
Yeah, but you guys also wanted so badly to win the league. Listen,
we do.
No, we do. Liverpool have choked. You know what? I know Liverpool.
No, we haven't choked.
Imeka,
how can you say we choked?
Imeka, I've been in this situation
before. No, we did not choke.
Imeka,
define choke.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to define it. Right,
yeah, 9 points clear.
I'm going to define.
No, it wasn't never one. It was 7 points.
I've been in the stage before as a teenager. You see a nice girl, she's beautiful. You cannot believe your luck, and it's just the both of you. and the words just don't come out right for you to get that pick. The words, you just cannot string the right sentence or the right mac, and boom, there she goes, end of the night, and, you know, her WhatsApp status is unavailable for the next two, what's that word, was Mixit. Her Mixit status is unavailable for the next 2 weeks, and my chance is gone. That's exactly what Liverpool did. They were there, they just needed to do the right thing, and they blew it. You had an opportunity to go 10 points ahead, and you blew it. The other problem I said about Liverpool, John, you know what, they need to roll back what I said about Liverpool regarding the number 9 and Roberto Firmino.
Yeah.
I said that there is no way in hell a team is going to win a league title without a number 9 leading the line. Did you check that rhyme? Right? I said it that Roberto Firmino is going to be Liverpool's biggest...
He's a false
biggest,
line.
Exactly, false. The key word there is false, right? And I said it that, you know, I just cannot see how a team is going to win any league title where the number 9, the guy up front, is not in some way leading in terms of goals within the team. Never mind the
that
league.
That theory, right? doesn't hold water.
Of
who was top scorer in the league?
How did Leicester?
Who was top scorer in the league?
How did Leicester
no,
do
who
it?
Who was top scorer in the league?
Aubameyang.
And who?
Oh, I just remember Aubameyang. I don't know the other two guys. Amika, I get that. But
Mohamed Salah and Mane.
But they are not leading.
It doesn't matter.
It does. That's why you didn't win the league.
How do you?
Sergio Aguero. Hello?
How many goals did he score?
But he led the line for Man City, right? Let's go through this, John. Okay, never mind. Put Amika aside. Let's go through this, right? Bayern Munich, right? They look like they're going to win the league, okay? Who's leading the line there? Robert Lewandowski, okay? Barcelona, Messi or Suarez, okay? Serie A, Cristiano Ronaldo, Dybala and Mandzukic, they've led the line. But I'm talking about the front guys. Forget the guys that come out wide and score, okay? You look at Man City, Sergio Aguero, right? And I'm looking at Liverpool and I'm thinking, where's Roberto Firmino in that conversation? Because the lack of his productivity up front as the number 9, as the guy leading the line, has cost Liverpool. He had that one good game against Arsenal. People were already putting him as a Ballon d'Or candidate. And that was it after that.
But I have to agree though with my Liverpool fight there.
Uh-huh.
Is that, I mean... the way Liverpool play, Bobby Firmino is probably responsible for 2/3 of their goals in terms of 2/3 of Mane's goals and Salah's goals because of his hold-up play.
Mm. So, but he still needs to chip in without your leading man.
Yes.
I mean, look at Leicester. I know Mario scored and assisted, but without Vardy, that league title is not coming.
Firmino has scored more than 20 goals this season.
Okay, what, 14 in the community, what, 14 in the Carabao Cup,
14.
6 in the league? That doesn't count, right?
No, he scored 12 in the
okay.
league.
But
he scored 12 in the league.
Pogba scored 13 in the league. How about that, right? So that's what I'm saying is that for Liverpool, look, Firmino is a good player. I know he draws defenders that open for Salah and Mane. But his lack of goals has ultimately cost Liverpool.
He played the first half of the season as a number 10.
Let's instead of focusing too much on Liverpool, who came second, let's take the conversation towards Manchester City. And again, we asked this question with Sundowns and how it is that they won the league locally. How did Manchester City... who I guess at one stage were fighting for the quadruple. How did they come back from the 7-point deficit at the turn of the year to win this league? Did the fact that maybe they were kicked out of the Champions League help in that regard?
I think the way I look at Manchester City, it's I'm going to use a boxing analogy here, right? If you look at any championship boxer when they fight against the number one contender or the guy that, you know, is, you know, the hot prospect, the early rounds, you know, seldom go to the champ because the guy, you know, he's feeling himself. He's got the crowd behind him. He's throwing in the first, you know, few big shots and the champion is backed up on the ropes a few times. And then eventually the class of the champion comes out where the middle to the later rounds and the championship rounds, you start seeing the quality of the champion. And I think that's exactly what Manchester City did. Because in the early stages, you had Liverpool really, you know, throwing out all the punches. Yeah. They were putting fours, fives, you know, hat-tricks left, right, and center. And Man City were sort of just, you know, keeping it, you know, at good distance. And then eventually, when, you know, the true test came after the Christmas period, which is where, you know, from about, you know, just before that February period, where you start to see the real sort of like the mantle of teams in terms of, you know, how strong they are. I think that came out in Man City, and there's a reason why they're champions, because they've been through this period. And that's something that Pep took him aback in his first season, was that turn of the new year where he struggled in his first season. And I think he realized, because remember, in the turn of the new year, you've got FA Cup, you know, if you're still in the Community Shield and the games flying in left, right and center, Champions League kicks in February. So the schedule is massive.
Christmas period where you didn't rest.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think he learned how to manage that and he had the squad to do that. And as true champions, they just waited it out. And like I said, with that boxing analogy, you know, the class eventually came through.
John, I want to ask you.
Sorry, before you go there, they won 14 games on the trot. And that's, I mean,
which was, I think, the first time in 14 the games of the league.
Their last 14 games of the season they won. And, you know, it's pretty much like how Chelsea won the league. Because Chelsea started the season, last season Chelsea won the league under Conte. They started very poorly and then they went on this winning run. And once you win, the more you win games, the more you get 3 points and so on and so forth. So at the point where Liverpool had the advantage, there were games that Liverpool drew, especially against Leicester. They also drew with United. And when, you know, you're drawing those games and City are winning, you know, so...
And Aguero scoring.
Club. And for City, I think the one thing that helped them in the last few games, when they were really under a lot of pressure, but they managed defensively. They kept 13 clean sheets. They also did something remarkable. They were winning the games 1-0.
Yeah.
There were games, for instance, against Leicester where, you know, they didn't, with all their strikers and all of their players, they kept passing and Leicester kept them at bay until, you know, company had to produce something out of the hat. And then, of course, you had moments where, you know, in certain games, I mean, in that game, they also got lucky. Kelechi Iheanacho comes on for Leicester, gets a chance, and on his favorite foot, and a moment to actually tell Pep, you were wrong to let me go, and then he misses that.
Wrong to let me go. Pep sent him there.
So when you have... When you have those kind of scenarios, a combination of great work, good defensive work, and if you look at it, I mean, Ederson was only pipped by Alisson to the Golden Glove by one extra clean sheet he kept yesterday. So, you know, credit to Pep and you know, that he had Liverpool push them to that level and still won just tells you that he will take a lot to push off the peck.
Pitch Invasion is the podcast for football tribalists. To contribute to the show, pose a topic of debate, or just complain about your favorite team, send us a WhatsApp voice note on +27 609 216977. That's +27 609 216977. Or send us a text message starting with #PitchInvasion. Remember to follow the Pitch Invasion podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram under the username Pitch Invaded.
Before we talk about the Champions League final and the Europa League final, John, I want to ask you, as far as the other five teams in this top six are concerned, how far behind Manchester City are they? And I'm asking this now when looking at next season. Can we expect, or should we expect, maybe two or three of the other five teams to just to be a bit closer, not really have one challenger? Because I guess if you're Manchester City and you only have one challenger for the title, it's easier compared to when you have another two teams that are really pushing you extremely hard.
I think it's going to be extremely hard to catch Man City. I don't think Liverpool will have the sort of season again where they get 97 points. I think it's and even City getting 98 points. I think it's going to be closer to probably 91, 92 points next year. Having said that, though, you know, you look at the nearest competitors. You look at a Chelsea with a transfer ban, and they might even lose Hazard to Real Madrid in the off season. So you can't see them really improving. Especially under Sarri, I think with his stubbornness, what we've seen this year. You look at Arsenal and you think they've lost a really top guy Ryan Ramsey, the heart and soul of that team. And when he doesn't play, and we saw that in the last couple of games of the season, where they were actually, you know, in pole position to try and beat Spurs to the top four.
Yeah.
You know, they failed because they don't have the heart. They need to find that guy. I don't know, that Vieira type guy there too, can actually, you know, whirl them forward, because they've got this soft underbelly, Arsenal, and especially in this league where you go and, you know, the old expression, on a cold night at Stoke, they seem to be faltering.
John, the question is not about Arsenal.
John, the question is not about Arsenal.
Damn it, you're bashing us. My goodness.
I started with Chelsea.
Yeah, but you're spending more time on Arsenal. Move on to Man United.
But now I'm going to Man United now. I'm going to Man United.
And, take your time, you know, here. We have as much time as you need.
And, you know, I'd be surprised next season if Ole makes it to Christmas.
Sure.
I'm going to put my neck out now and say Ole is not going to get to Christmas.
I was thinking more like, you know, the first round of the Europa League. you've gone further than me.
So why do you say that, John?
I think, you know, he's not the type of coach United needs. I think they thought, and they let go of Mourinho, which I actually think suits them better, because they need a top guy, you know, who's well respected and a guy that everybody looks up to and a guy people will play for, like a Jurgen Klopp, who also who's got maybe a better personality than Mourinho in terms of, you know, dressing room antics and getting the best out of players. They need a Klopp type guy, and I think Ole is too soft. First of all, I think he's too soft, and I don't think he's got the experience though to lead a big club like Man United. I was so relieved that, you know, they appointed him permanently, because I could see, you know, Pochettino going there, and I could see him being the sort of fit they actually need.
Mind you, John, I mean, I was telling friends of mine that, you know, it's possible that they could give, I mean, a reporter asked Pochettino about his future post the Champions League semi-final Ajax, and he didn't say anything concrete. And that, to me, was sort of the smoke that any United fan is hoping to see. Because you're hoping that smoke, in the long run, is leading to that fire where they fire Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and they give him a golden handshake and, you know, they give him lifetime, you know, tickets to the stadium and his kids can come play at the academy and his grandkids, and a massive deal for Pochettino. I know getting Pochettino at Old Trafford would cost United in the 60-something million, right? But what's that to Man United?
Exactly. That's nothing. And especially, but, you know, with Pochettino at this point, he's had this project now for the last 4 or 5 years with Spurs. And this project has been basically coming along nicely. He's built a team, and he's got to a Champions League final. He's got to the top four again. If he goes to United, does he feel, does he have the energy, does he, you know, does, is he in the right frame of mind to start over again, to build a team from scratch? Because a lot of the Spurs team he's put together piece by piece, and, you know, you know, we don't know what's going to happen on the 1st of June, but that could be the culmination of, you know, what he has done. And then, you know, that would allow maybe for Daniel Levy to give him free rein now and, you know, maybe open the checkbooks, although I don't think we've got money. I think we first have to pay off the stadium at the moment before. But, you know, that's going to be important. And United now, they've already spent an enormous amount of money. United spend a lot of money. And now they've got to spend again now in this transfer window to try and rebuild the team. And, you know, I don't know if they will be able to. I don't think they'll make the top four either next year.
I think from a United fans perspective, what's going to be really key is whether we start next season with De Gea and Pogba. If we don't, well, it's just going to be even worse than what it is right now. If we do, and we maybe get in another 3 or 4 players, you know, that are of some sort of ability, then we're talking a different story. Because, again, you look at Chelsea and their inability to build. You look at Arsenal and, again, you know, they're going to have, obviously, that front three is still really good. But there's still a lot of areas where I'm not sure if Emery's going to be able to you know, have a look at. Then United have got a chance. It's just, this season is something that we can easily forget quite quickly.
Because you must remember that the transfer window is going to be difficult this time around. Because you've got Barcelona looking to bolster. You've got Real Madrid in dire need of bolstering. And so you've got Juventus, I think, is also going to put in a couple of big plays because they won a Champions League final. They need to make sure that this investment in Ronaldo also culminates in the Champions League final.
Exactly.
So it's going to be this champion. So teams like Man United will not be playing Champions League. Arsenal, who still has a chance in the Europa League final, playing Champions League. But I think if you're not in the Champions League, you're not going to get the cream of the crop. And there's going to be a fine fight for those Ajax kids also next season.
That's a very good point you make. The fact that Barcelona and Madrid and Juventus are going to be, in fact, and even Bayern are going to be going pretty deep into the
PSG as well.
It does leave United in a bit of a spot of bother. But it's something that I'm sure the coffers and all the money that United have, they will try and sort out using all that cash. But let's quickly now focus on the two finals coming up before we let you go. One, of course, your team and that other red team. If you were to put your heart and head, where does the head say, you know, the title is going, and the heart? So start with the head and give us the heart.
Look, if I would have been really happy if we'd played this Champions League final on Wednesday. Because Jurgen Klopp basically has got 2 weeks to pick this Liverpool team up, who got to 97 points and still didn't win the Premier League. I'm telling you, they're hurting. They're hurting at the moment. The fans are hurting. So they've got basically maybe give them a week off, couple of days off to relax and then come back and focus again. And so I would have loved to have played them on Wednesday. But as far as Spurs is concerned, I think the 2 weeks anyway is a fantastic break because we just looked really tired towards the end of the season. I think we were stretched as a squad. We don't have a big squad. There was been a lot of mixing and matching. We saw Eriksen playing in four different positions over the last couple of weeks. We've seen Son running his socks off. Everybody running their socks off. So I think that these 2 weeks is going to be crucial in getting some rest, but also getting Harry Kane back.
If we get him to
Madrid, I think we've got more. We've got a 50-50 shot at actually winning. You know, it's a final, and finals are strange things, especially at neutral venues. So if we were playing at Anfield, I would have said, you know, it's going to be difficult, but it's a new venue, it's a one-off, anything can happen, and you know, both teams have showed that they have the bottle to go and do it. So my head still says it's going to be difficult, but my heart obviously says it's going to be Tottenham all the way.
So Tottenham all the way for the Champions League final. The lesser of the finals, the one that really nobody cares about, will be Chelsea and Arsenal. And as far as that is concerned, where do you see that one going?
I do care about it because I want Chelsea to keep Arsenal out of the Champions League.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, there it is.
The lesser of the two evils, as far as Spurs fans are concerned, they both are very evil, but the lesser of the two evils, come on, you Blues. Which is actually better. But I think Chelsea would actually be favourite. If they've got their best team on the park, for the final, man for man, I think they should beat Arsenal. Arsenal's got a fantastic front line. I think probably right up there with Liverpool, Man City and Spurs. But that, unfortunately, central midfield and the centre backs are absolute disasters. And
we took to the Tottenham Stadium and nearly turned you upside down.
But your man missed the penalty, which would have actually gotten you into the Champions.
He's evolved since then.
Who won Central in half this year?
No, look.
Sorry.
No. Before you stammer, who won Central in half this
year? St. Tottenham's, was it?
St. Tottenham.
Tottenham's what? Sorry, St. Tottenham.
It's at the end of the season. There's usually the one day where the title for St. Tottenham's Day is who finished top between Arsenal and Tottenham.
Yeah, we've already won that title. That St. Tottenham's Day has been cancelled. It's been cancelled 3 years in a row now. Most people don't actually know what the youngsters coming through doesn't know what that means.
John, thank you so much for your take on the English game. And I certainly, as a United fan, hope it goes exactly as you've just planned, and as you just laid out, Spurs to win the Champions League final and Chelsea to win the Europa League final as well. We'll hopefully get a chance to chat to you as well after those finals, and we could just have a look back on the two matches. But up until then, do take care of yourself, and thank you once again for your time.
Fantastic, guys. Thanks for having me, and all the best for the future.
Thanks, John.
Okay, so before we do actually wrap up, we have to, we've already touched on it, but a bit of a mini preview to that final. Say, Imika, John goes head, it's going to be difficult. Heart, Spurs. Are you at liberty to share what you feel is going to happen come the 1st of June?
I think that, you know, the final is the perfect setting for Liverpool's end of season, and with the momentum that they've come through and how well they've done, I think that, you know, that one game against Tottenham, they're coming in with experience from last year. Last year there were moments in that game where, you know, especially after Salah went off, where they kind of lost their head, and then of course they weren't helped by the mistakes by the goalkeeper, because they did come back in that game. And, you know, the two of the goals, the last two goals, were just down to poor goalkeeping. I think that, to a large extent, you know, they finished the game against Wolves with a clean slate, because Alisson stepped up, and he also did very big against Barcelona in the first half, because people tend to forget that Barcelona had chances in the first half of that game. Mm-hmm. And there were even moments where it was Messi one-on-one, and he pulled off some saves. So they're coming in with a lot more experience. They're coming in, you know, with motivation to try and make up for losing that. And for Spurs, you know, it's going to be a very difficult game, because Spurs also found themselves somehow in the finals. Yeah. So it's going to be very, very competitive game. I hope we get Harry Kane back, so that it's a lot more competitive. I usually don't like when, you know, big players miss out. You know, as a fan, I want Liverpool to win, but, you know, as someone who works in the game, I think that we're going to see a very, very competitive final, and I think that it could go either way, because you never know with a one-leg final. But I have a lot more confidence in the ability for Liverpool to win that game, besides Tottenham struggles really against Liverpool. And the second game of the season at Anfield, it was really tight until, you know, it seemed like maybe even Lloris gifted them that goal. So that if you look at that as a good benchmark, then we're up for a good final. But I am very convinced that they will win. If it's any consolation, the fact that people have been having a go at both Jurgen Klopp and Pochettino, that both of them, you know, play good football. They've had their teams, you know, and their fans all excited, and they haven't won anything. We know for a fact that one of them will win, and I hope at the end of the day it's Liverpool. So I'll be happy.
I think this is for Klopp. This is a terrible team to play in a once-off game, because when it comes to motivational, you know, Klopp, I mean, he's right up there. But Poch is right up there as well.
So, you know, in terms of motivating, Klopp has got a very remarkable record. In that
his record in finals is terrible.
No, I mean, I'm not even talking about finals. I'm saying that, you know, after losing 3-0, a lot of people were saying, you know, he has this record where he's never lost whenever he has to play two legs. So when at 3-0, everyone was saying, you know, That record is going because, you know, Barcelona have beaten them 3-0 and what have you. And then he pulled something out of it, pretty much how he did against Dortmund in the Europa League a few years ago. So now he has to go a step forward and try and exercise the ghost of losing, you know, more finals. Because in the last three seasons, he's improved the team so much, but it seemed to have come short. You know, losing in the League Cup final, losing in the Europa League final, losing in the Champions League final last season, and then also losing in the league. You know, which is funny because they went all the way to 97 points. You know, someone said something to me yesterday about them winning the goalkeeper, best goalkeeper, best defender, best player, best two players were top scorers, and losing only one game and still coming second. I mean, I've had enough. I had to switch up my phone last night because all of my friends from everywhere reminded me that we were second. But you know,
I can imagine just how much that just
I just hope that on June 1st. Oof, all of that is taken out of the way.
But I honestly,
you know, my two cents worth in this, I honestly think Liverpool are going to win. I just think, you know what, the firepower that Liverpool have that they displayed against Barcelona cannot be ignored. And I mean, you know, to put four past Barcelona, I think, you know, even as a neutral fan, I find it difficult, you know, for any team after that to stop you when you've had that level of confidence, to be honest to you. And I mean, I know Spurs had a turnaround themselves, but they didn't beat Barcelona 4-0.
Yeah.
And I think that to me will just be the catalyst, you know, to their motivation to seeing it through. And I also, you know, in a strange way, I kind of want Liverpool to win it. You know, yes, because I don't want Spurs to win it. But also just for African football, I can't remember the last time a team won the Champions League where African players were at the center of that victory. And I think this is a great opportunity for African football. We've had it in the Premier League with Aubameyang, Salah and Mane winning the top goal scorer. I think here's another opportunity for African football, especially on an attacking front, you know, to be glorified. Yeah,
which is
again
weird because it's one thing we are always accused of. We don't score goals.
Exactly.
In Africa, so.
So I really think, you know, it's a bigger story for African football if Liverpool do win it, because you have Mane and Salah having led that
Keita
team
as well. Keita,
but you know, to a large extent, Mane and Salah are the protagonists here. And I think that, to me, will just be a tremendous story for African football if Liverpool do win it.
Also, I mean, building up, of course, to AFCON 2019.
Yes.
So it's just going to be a good time if that does happen. I tend to agree with you as far as that is concerned. Quickly, Europa League, your team up against Chelsea. I mean, look, we're going to touch on this, you know, as we get closer to it, but just in terms of a quick... based on where the two
just,
teams are.
You know, where the two teams are, you know, with Chelsea, there's only one guy we're afraid of, which is Eden Hazard. And I mean, the last time we played Chelsea, in fact, both games at the Bridge and at the Emirates, right? We beat them.
Giroud.
No, he can come. I don't really not bother, right?
Competition.
So, you know, we handled Chelsea quite well at Stamford Bridge, right? We even led and we should have gone on to win that game by a couple of goals. We were unlucky. But we did the business the second time around when they came to the Emirates. And I think, you know, one thing that you have to give Unai Emery praise for, he's taken the fear away, you know, from playing the bigger sides. I mean, guys, he only lost to Manchester City twice. You know, the only time was that loss to Liverpool, but we drew at the Emirates. Other than that, he's beaten, you know, Man City, he's beaten Man United, he's beaten Tottenham, and he's beaten Chelsea. So that fear of a big team against Arsenal, I don't have it anymore. And in a one-off game, I think we are more dangerous than Chelsea, because in a one-off game, Chelsea, it's obvious where they're relying in terms of the source of their inspiration and goals. For us, it's coming from everywhere. It's coming from Aubameyang. It's coming from Lacazette. And if you're not careful, someone like Mkhitaryan can punish you. Iwobi, on his day, can also come up with a few things. So for me, in all honesty, I think Arsenal are going to pip Chelsea.
Okay, we're going to touch on this, you know, as we get closer, obviously, to the Europa League.
I think Arsenal win.
Yeah.
For the singular reason that Unai Emery is the king of the Europa League.
Yeah.
You know, he's done it over and over with Sevilla.
And, four times.
And I think he took Arsenal to that even when
Sevilla.
You know what was really funny about Arsenal's run in the Europa League is that, you know, you will see Arsenal stumble in the league game over the weekend. They'll even lose back-to-back games. But, you know, they'll get into the Europa and somehow they'll click. I think he finds he's more comfortable with that format. He spent 1 year in England and probably might be better prepared for the league next season. Yeah. But the Europa format, he was comfortable with how to play his team. And, I mean, if it's some consolation, he was coach of Sevilla when they beat Liverpool, you know, not too long ago. So, Sarri, maybe he needs to get some more packs.
On that bombshell, we are going to wrap up. But again, yeah, we'll touch a bit more detail perhaps on both the Champions League and Europa League finals as we continue. We're looking forward to what's going to be a fantastic, I guess, official wrap of the European leagues as well when it comes to those two competitions. But do remember as well that the COSAFA Cup as well as the AFCON is also coming up, and as well as I think a lot of people have forgotten about this, the Nedbank Cup final.
And the Women's World Cup
nine against the CS Galaxy. That's going to be interesting for those who are invested. I've taken my investments well out of Kaiser Chiefs, thank you very much. But by this time next week, we'll know who's the Nedbank Cup winner. And of course, they'll be going on to play CAF Confederation Cup football. So, yeah, good luck.
CS Galaxy versus Koma here. Can you imagine?
Well, it's probably a chance for Chiefs to remedy their season.
It's not going to be a remedy. It's not remedy enough.
Well, it's the final. It's the end of the season, and you know it's in Durban, so they've got a massive fan base there. So
yeah.
I think that you know
stadium alone, please.
A win in that game will kind of make up for what has been a very, very, very poor season for them.
They've been poor.
If they lose to TS Galaxy,
leave the stadium alone, please. If it does happen, just walk out in shame, please. But yeah, it's going to be something to look forward to as well as the FA Cup final. That's also coming up soon, isn't it?
Pep.
It's same day as the Nedbank Cup final.
Okay, Pep had a
target of a quadruple on his first ended is maybe. He gets the trouble which no one has ever done. So, yeah.
Okay. So before we do close officially, PSL Awards, the nominees have just been released over the past couple of hours. And the one big thing that has been surprising for me, no Gaston Sereno in any of the categories, which is absolutely remarkable. He's been, you know, arguably Sundowns' best player. But when it comes to the main ones, the goalkeeper of the season, Peter Leeuwenberg, Ronan Williams, Dennis Onyango, they'll be playing for that. There is the players, player and footballer of the season nominees, Temiko Siloch, Themba Zwane, Hlompho Kekana. So one of those three will walk away with the big gong. The defender of the season, Thamsanqa Mkhize of Cape Town City, Ricardo Nascimento and Sifiso Hlanti. Those are pretty much, yeah, the important ones. At Telkom Knockout Player of the Season, Elvis Chipazeze, Temiko Siloch, Mduduzi Mdantsane. I think, yeah, really the big thing is that Gaston Sereno is not in any of the categories, which I must say I'm a bit surprised about.
Yeah, it's a real surprise, but I think, you know, when I hear, you know, some of the nominees, I think, you know, you cannot deny some of the guys. So I think, you know, one guy not being there, yeah, it's okay. It's not like, you know, Pogba's inclusion in the PFA team of the season.
Okay, all right. So we have those to look forward to as well next Sunday, taking place in Durban after the Nedbank Cup final. So still a lot of domestic and, of course, European football to look forward to. But for now, my name is Lwazi Sikubu.
Wala Makwaza.
Emeka Inyadike, the UEFA Champions League winner in waiting.
Well, please, let's play that clip again. After, literally, we're going to start with that after the Champions League final. Please, let's do that.